Jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, I'm your host for this show, a brand new guest for you guys. I say new and like quotes because the guest today has been on this show for quite some time, but new this season. So new to some of the new listeners out there. Before we get to that, make sure you go and subscribe to the podcast, whatever podcast platform you're using, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, any of those type of things, so you don't miss an episode every single day. A great guest like the one today, Joe Molnix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues. My good friend, what's going on, man?
Yeah, enough with this new stuff, okay? I already have people on my own staff who get excited when me and Anthony Sane record a podcast together. We've been doing this since people have been teenagers. Like, there's probably 13 and 14-year-olds that were listening to us and reading our stuff back in the day. Mark, come on. We're veterans of this game at this point, you and I.
True. Look, I get it. I knew when I said new, I tweeted that the other day, and you quoted me and said, quote, tweet new. You're right. Obviously, Joe spent all your last year on the show with me. I waited to the end of your football season before I asked you to do even more work than you already are doing. As most everybody knows, you're also a football coach. So I kindly waited till that was done and over and out of your way because you have a family just like I do. So I understand the requirements that takes.
And in fairness to you, you've done a great job building up Locked On Grizzlies. So you do have some new listeners since the last time I was on. So hello to everyone. I am Joe Molinax. If you want to get angry, follow me on Twitter at Joe Molinax and check out my blog, grizzlybearblues.com, where I employ lots of different writers who will also assist in making you very frustrated about the Memphis Grizzlies. If that's not a commercial for Grizzly Bear Blues, I don't know what it is.
I thought it was great, and I was gonna say if you want to get frustrated about the Grizzlies, just watch a game.
that's all
you got to do, really.
That's true too.
Well, let's get to the Grizzlies. Let's talk about it since you haven't obviously you and I haven't really talked a lot this year, not as much as we usually do. Again, you've been busy, I've been busy. What are your general thoughts on where the Grizzlies stand now?
They are what we thought they were. Like, my greatest frustration, and as you mentioned, I'm a football coach, so we made the second round of the playoffs, which is a good thing for my day job. But I would watch from afar, and I would post a lot less normally than I do on a more regular basis now that the coaching side of things has slowed down. And I would see people on Twitter just losing their minds about losing streaks. What did you expect? The two best players on their team can't drink a beer yet legally. You got Jonas Valanciunas as one of your key contributors, not just in terms of being a role player. He's supposed to be a star. Like, what did you expect from this team? You have Taylor Jenkins, who's, I think, 34 years old, one of the youngest head coaches in the NBA. Maybe he's a little bit older than that. But he's new to the job. You don't have a single player on your active roster that was born in the 1980s. What were people thinking? I guess it's fun to talk about rebuilds, but then once you're actually in the thick of it, you're watching losing basketball game after losing basketball game, and you're watching a third quarter where an actual veteran NBA roster comes out and runs you off the gym floor, you're surprised? Why?
Yep.
It's not the team's fault, it's yours. Your perspective is flawed. The prism you're viewing them through is skewed. You didn't have a prayer. If you thought this team was going to be better than it is, they're doing exactly what they were supposed to do all along. And they're being a fun team to watch while doing it. I don't know what else you could ask of a team that is depending on Solomon Hill in the year of our Lord, 2019, to contribute meaningful minutes. And I don't mean that as disrespect to Solomon Hill. It's an amplified version of what you and I have talked about for the last 2 years, Mark. It's a roster that is being asked to do more than it is capable of doing. Dylan Brooks is a 14 to 16 minute a night, maybe
exactly.
18 minutes a night rotation player on a good basketball team. He's not.
You're exactly right. No, you're exactly right. And Solomon Hill, like I said this on my Monday show, like it's great that Solomon Hill's going out and getting minutes, and it's great that he actually recorded the Monday show super late on Monday. It was after the Pacers game, and it's great he's out there going getting minutes, but like that's like the opposite of what you need, opposite of what Solomon Hill is going to do on a regular basis.
Don't forget why Solomon Hill is here.
Yeah,
Solomon Hill is a member of the Memphis Grizzlies because he's not Chandler Parsons.
And because exactly. He has two better knees.
He's contributing physically more than Chandler Parsons.
Yes.
Arguably, I'd have to check the numbers, but if Solomon Hill stays on this pace and he stays with the Grizzlies, he may play more minutes in one season than Chandler Parsons did in three. He might be close now.
Yeah.
So I guess my frustration, Mark, and hopefully your listeners can hear it, is what were people expecting? Like, be excited that John Morant looks like he's going to be that superstar that you and I talked about over the summer when you got mad at me for entertaining the idea of RJ Barrett. I said all along that I wanted John Morant, but I was open to the conversation. And thank God they took John Morant. Because while Barrett looks like he's going to be a decent NBA player too, John Morant looks like a superstar. Like, there's not a question in my mind that is his ceiling now. He could be a legitimate NBA superstar. And that's phenomenal. If they can keep him healthy and keep him right, and he stays on the trajectory that he's on, that's a hell of a pick by the Memphis Grizzlies. And lo and behold, Brandon Clark falls into their lap at 21 overall, and now you've got another starting level player on the next great Grizzlies team. And that's where I think the perspective of fans is flawed. You're looking at this team, if you're frustrated with their record, through the idea of them supposing to be good now. That was never going to happen. Every player on this roster, when you analyze how they play, when you evaluate their skill set, when you watch these games, you should not be thinking about the year 2019. You should be thinking about the year 2021, because that's the soonest that this team is going to be playoff relevant again. And when you watch Dylan Brooks, you should be asking yourself, can this guy be a contributor on the next great Grizzlies team? I think he can as a rotation player. Can DeAnthony Melton be a contributor on the next great Grizzlies team? I think he can as a rotation player. Can Marco Gudelich be a contributor on the next great Grizzlies team? Probably not. And that is the lens that you should be looking at this season through. Anything other than that, and you're setting yourself up for disappointment.
You know, we talked about this last year, and I've talked about it out on my hot tubs, but we had this conversation of, and people would ask me about blowing it up, because we had our Monday mailbag. I would get questions about blowing it up when Mark and Mike were both still here. And I always tell people, you know, be careful what you wish for, because it is very difficult in this league, and luck has a lot to do with it, but it's very difficult in this league to be a contender and turn around quickly. You could look at the Sacramento Kings, who have been wandering aimlessly in the desert for I don't know how many years. Like, you could easily get there. Like, you could, if the Grizzlies, you know, didn't hit John Moran, didn't hit Brandon Clark, those two simple picks, and you're there now. So, like, you know, be very careful what you wish for, and thank God that John Moran is what he is, because, like I said, they look further along now, honestly, than I thought they would be. Like, I haven't won in 21 games the entire season, and so far, I think they've surpassed more wins in this month than I thought they really would. And the Golden State Warriors, obviously not as good. Obviously, they didn't even win that game, but, like, there are teams, and just because of John Moran has kept them in a lot of these games. And so, and because Brandon Clark has been a rotation high level, even starting caliber player out of the gate, which I don't know if people don't understand how phenomenal that is. Like, that doesn't really happen that often. And we preach on this show, be patient. It's going to be, you know, they're going to be bad, but hopefully it's going to be fun. And that's exactly what it's been this year. They've been bad, but guess what? They've also been super fun to watch. And it sucks that John Morant's out, but like, that's what they are right now. What's your biggest disappointment so far, I guess player wise that you thought would be better at this point in the year than they are?
I expected more out of Grayson Allen. And I think that when people hear that, they probably are rolling their eyes. I expected him to be a competent NBA player.
Yeah.
And maybe the injury has not really allowed for him to, because I remember he was out, I believe it was 9 games with the ankle injury. So maybe that disrupted his flow early on in the season in terms of getting into the swing of things. But at some point, you got to be a player. You know, you can't make excuses for guys long term, especially like we talked about. If you're losing the lens, is Grayson Allen going to be a contributing member of the next Grizzlies playoff team? Right now, the answer is no. And I think that Memphis probably was hoping for him. Well, Grayson Allen by no means was the main cog of the Mike Conley trade. I'm sure that if you pulled, Jason Wexler and Zach Kleiman aside, Tayshaun Prince off the record and asked them, they'd probably say that they thought they would get more out of Grayson Allen. It's still early in the season. They've only played 20 games. They've got 62 to go. So there's a long way to go, and Grayson can turn things around. But I was expecting more out of him in terms of NBA competency. He doesn't look like an NBA player right now, and that's a problem, obviously, for him, but also for the Grizzlies. I mean, they're on the hook for his money next year, and it's not a ton. I think it's like $2 million or maybe a little bit more than that. But it's still a roster spot, and I'm not sure, aside from being a trade throw-in, what you would get out of his contract moving forward. To me, Grayson Allen's a good example of being disappointed. I would have said Jonas Valanciunas if I had come on your show 2 weeks ago, but he's turned things around a little bit, which is good for the Grizzlies. They need him to be that bridge because Jaren Jackson Jr. is obviously not quite ready to be that center just yet. But beyond that, I guess disappointment, again, it's a relative term. You expect, or I went into this season expecting a young team that has talent that is unproven and outside of ideal roles to struggle. And they're doing exactly what they were supposed to do. They're 6-14. That puts them on pace for what? 24, 25 wins?
Yeah.
That's exactly almost precisely, maybe give or take a game.
I think Vegas had them at 26. So, yeah.
Right. That's exactly right. Vegas had them at 26. So they're right where everybody thought they were going to be. And it may not be fun to see that your favorite team lost 5 games in a row. But when you're a lottery team that's potentially going to have another top 5 or so pick in an NBA draft, you're going to be pretty bad. That doesn't mean that you're not going to be competitive. That doesn't mean you're tanking. And I think that that is one of my favorite things about this team. And we had an article go up, The Culture of We, over at grizzlybearblues.com on Tuesday. They did a great job kind of breaking down the idea of just because you're a team that is losing doesn't mean that you have to be tanking. And I don't think the Grizzlies are tanking. They just don't have the physical capacity to compete with a veteran NBA roster for a full 48-minute game. And Brendan Smart did a good job. He was the author of the article. It's a good thing to remember. They're not doing this on purpose. I don't think that they're trying to lose. I don't think that they have what it takes to win in terms of talent. But you can still build what it means to be a Memphis Grizzly again. They finally moved on from grit and grind and all of that kind of stuff. It's a new generation of players, and it's their turn to kind of make what this roster and what this franchise means moving forward, going into a new decade and a new era of Grizzlies basketball. Turning that page was always going to be gritty. It was always going to be bloody. There was always going to be some pain as you grow through these moments. You kind of have to just bear it and move forward with them and try to look forward to, like I said, that future point, maybe 2 years from now when you expect a little bit more in terms of production. But right now is not that time to have that expectation.
Well, I think that you're absolutely right. But also, I mean, it was always going to be a difficult time to move on. But Ja Morant sure as hell, he helps.
Well, sure.
He makes it easy, doesn't it? He makes it easy to forget about Mike Conley. That's for sure. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to talk about some more stuff, some of the things that have happened recently. I do want to talk about Jonas Valanciunas, something that you alluded to. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with more from Joe Mullinix. Welcome back to the show. Talking with Joe Mullinix, site manager of grizzlybearblues.com. And I didn't say this before we took a break, but I think Tyus Jones would have been my pick for the biggest disappointment for me. I expected more out of him from the backup point guard spot, who is a competent, we know is a competent NBA player, has proven it, and Timber right. in Minnesota. I honestly, this is what I have, not to get off topic, but this is what I have boiled it down to for Tyus Jones, is that he has never played this fast before, ever.
Right.
He is, every time he's been in the, every position, or excuse me, every team the Timberwolves have played on that he's been on has been marginally average in pace or the bottom of the league. Because if you look at his assist, his turnover ratio is way, way up. But that comes with the idea of just slinging the ball around. And Taylor Diggins doesn't care about turnovers as much as
more increased players. Possessions.
Correct. So
I mean, you have the ball more and you're getting more possessions, you're naturally going to turn the ball over more.
Right. And again, Taylor has his philosophy of just make the pass. If it's a turnover, that's what fine, we'll deal with it. And eventually, hopefully those turnovers will decrease as they continue to learn to play with this fast pace. So that would be my disappointment. But I think there's also I don't think he's in the right space, but also think there's a lot of reasons behind that, and it's not necessarily because it's Tyus. So either way, let's move on to some things that have recently happened with the Grizzlies. Obviously, you mentioned Ja Morant's going to be out. Brandon Clark's going to be out. Jonas Valanciunas was out the past couple of games, although I think he'll be back. Jonas Valanciunas and Jaren Jackson Jr., I have questions still whether they can be long-term compatible on the court at the same time. Do you have those questions, or are you convinced that they can be successful together?
I'm convinced that it doesn't necessarily matter, to be honest with you. I'm not really worried about it long-term, largely because Jonas Valanciunas isn't going to be there long-term. I don't.
Well, he's going to be here for the next 2 years, at least, you know, probably.
In theory, but again, over these next 2 years, you don't expect them to be a particularly good basketball team. So
okay.
I don't have a concern as much as I have a vision for what it should look like. And right now they're not at that vision. In a perfect world, that vision is Jonas Valanciunas being the guy coming off the bench, you know, almost like what we wanted Zach Randolph to
right.
be as that super six man, big bullying reserve bigs, while Jaren and Brandon are your starters at the five and the four. They're not ready to do that yet. So because of that, you're in that weird in-between point where the roster isn't clean. I think long-term, if you're going to have Jonas Valanciunas around, you have to put him in a position to be successful. And right now, teams are just attacking him in the pick and roll. They're allowing, or excuse me, Jonas is allowing way, way, way too much penetration on the pick and roll when he drops because he doesn't have the lateral foot speed to keep up with guys off the dribble. It's easy open jumpers, or if somebody has to collapse off the wing to help in terms of defense, it leaves open shooters. He's a liability on that end, and he doesn't have the ability to do what they need him to do. So as a reserve, it would be a lot less of a problem, but they're not ready to have Jaren and Brandon, when he's healthy, able to take on the load that Jonas is able to do physically. So it's almost like Britney Spears, you know, I'm not a girl, not yet a woman. That song by
that is
her.
That's the perfect analogy from you, Joe. That is great.
They're not a wing, but they're not yet an NBA big. And there's probably a better way to phrase that, but you know,
I like the other way personally. That's a much better way to phrase it.
And all they need is time, you know, just like Brittany said, all they need is time to kind of grow and come along. And I think Jonas is that bridge. So he's being paid to essentially eat rebounds and score points because they obviously need help scoring. And they're not necessarily as concerned about his defensive issues because he's not going to be that guy long term. They just need him to eat minutes right now and be a productive player in terms of rebounds and points and efficiency now, while Jaren and Brandon kind of find their footing. So I guess it can be concerning. I'm not as concerned about it for the reasons that I just stated. But if you want to maximize Jonas, I think he has to be a reserve player, and they're just not ready for him to be that yet. Not even because it's Jonas's fault. It's because Jaren and Brandon just aren't physically there.
Yeah, I think that a lot of that I would probably tend to agree with. I actually asked Taylor about the defensive – kind of what they were doing with Jonas Valanciunas and dropping him on a lot of that pick and roll coverage. And if you notice, and I actually did this, a really expensive show about this, if you haven't heard it, it's on the feed, but Jonas actually has a lot, or Jaren actually has a lot of those same schematic defensive of dropping the big onto, you know, as far as just dropping them down low. So I think it is a problem with Jonas for sure, just because he is not capable enough. But at the same time, they do that with both bigs, so it is also a scheme, I think, is an issue that I think you should be playing up more. But it also, like, it kind of rubs both ways. You got to play up more, but do you have really the personnel to play it more? So it's a bit of both things. But I think ultimately you're probably right that Jonas isn't capable enough to do those on a regular basis and not get burnt all the time. What about Brandon Clark? Do you think he is starting by the end of the year, or do you think it's going to take another, you know, until next year before we see that change?
I think it has to do with Jaron more than it has to do with Brandon. I mean, we had an article to go up over at GBB by Nate Chester talking about how Brandon Clark is literally one of the most efficient rookies offensively in the history of the NBA at this stage. And of course, small sample size theater applies here. But he looks the part, and he's 23 years old. He's physically more far along than Jaron is. I think it's more a Jaron question than it is a Brandon question. It's where Jaron is in his development. And Jaron's not ready to be that five that goes against starting caliber fives, you know, the Karl Anthony Towns, the Joel Embiids, DeAndre Ayton once he comes back from suspension. You know, there's all sorts of bigs up and down the list that you can name that maybe, obviously, in the modern NBA, a lot of these guys are more perimeter-based as it is. But when they attack the rim, or when a shooting guard or a point guard slashes to the basket, and, you know, you're depending on Jaron to be that primary rim defender, he still is learning how to use his body properly. You know, and some of the fouls that are called against him are crap, but if everybody's being honest and watching the game properly, he doesn't use his body well. He doesn't know how to align himself. It's like a baby giraffe learning how to walk. He's better than he was, but his limbs, he's still figuring out the angles of the NBA athlete and speed that they attack the rim at. He's not there yet. He's still processing. He's still downloading, so to speak. So it's not fair to him to expect him to do that. So for me, yeah, I think Brandon Clark is ready to be a starter, but it's not about Brandon. It's about Jaron. And once Jaron is able to be that five, because I think Brandon is a more natural four in terms of who they defend, roles, and overall scheme on both ends of the floor, once Jaron is ready, I think you'll see that natural transition of Jonas to that third big, getting 24 or so minutes a night. That's where he's at his best. And again, he can feast on smaller bigs, or not smaller, but reserve bigs that don't have the same skill sets, and you don't lose on pick and roll defense. You know, once Jaron is up to snuff in terms of his foul issues, which probably won't happen overnight, once that is a place where you're able to go, you know, depending on the lineup, you could switch everything. And if you're able to do that effectively at the NBA level, you're going to have a pretty efficient defense. Beyond that roster. But if you have a Kyle Anderson, Dylan Brooks, Josh Jackson, if he ever comes up, Brandon Clark, Jaron Jackson Jr. lineup, you know, your shortest guy is 6'6". Like, you could do a lot of switching, and that can really mess with opposing offenses pretty effectively. So we're a ways away from that, but I think the question isn't whether Brandon is ready, it's whether Jaron is ready to take on that role that he's more naturally suited for than Brandon is.
And that's a great perspective, and so it's probably not something that, in terms of the way I usually have viewed it. So I think that's a really good point. And I think you're absolutely right. Jaron's, a lot of his foul issues are not because they're dumb fouls, or just because he's just out of position. He's not in the right position, or he's late. Just those type of things, or a player gets by him and he just kind of bodies him because he's just already by him. And they're not necessarily dumb fouls. They're just fouls that he's just late to the party, if you will.
When it comes back to the idea that we've talked about before, and I've talked about it over at the blog, Jaron Jackson Jr. struggled as a freshman at Michigan State with these issues. So all of a sudden you think he's going to come to the NBA with arguably the greatest athletes on the planet playing this game, and he's going to be some remarkable defender with no foul issues? That's unrealistic. So to go back to what we were talking about in the previous segment, if you expected more out of Jaron Jackson Jr. at this stage, you're wrong, not him. Your perspective is off. He was always going to have these issues. And that's why I didn't like the draft pick when they made it, because the belief was still that they were going to try to compete. If anything, I like the Jaron pick even more now, because they're not trying to compete, And in terms of ceiling, outside of Luka Doncic, nobody has a higher ceiling than Jaren Jackson Jr. even now in that 2018 draft. So you give him a chance to grow and try to learn and figure out his body and the angles that are necessary and rotations. And that all comes with reps. And I think that he's going to continue to get those. Obviously, with Brandon being out, even more so. You know, Jaren Jackson Jr. needs all the minutes he can get. And that's where the biggest issue is with the fouls right now. When he's in foul trouble or when he fouls out, those are valuable minutes of development that he's missing out on in live game action.
I think you're absolutely right. Let's take one more quick break. We'll be back to wrap up with Joe Monix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, after this. Welcome back to the show. Wrapping up with Joe Monix from Grizzly Bear Blues. We're a little bit behind on time, so I'll ask you this one question. De'Anthony Melton got some time, probably going to see some more time, as Ja Morant is noticeably week to week, not day to day. So I don't think he's coming back anytime soon. As you noted, it's CN 2020, and somebody argued
January 1st, 2020.
Yeah, I knew what you meant, but I don't think people got it. It was quite funny that people were like, shut him down for the season. Anyway, De'Anthony Melton got some time. Where are you at on De'Anthony Melton? What do you think? Does he need more time? I ultimately think that the coaching staff views him as a backup point guard and not a wing, and I think that will stunt or limit his minutes until they think they can put him on the court with Ja Morant and with, you know, another wing out there, another guard out there. I saw he closed the game with Tyus Jones, so maybe that view is coming around. I don't know, but that's kind of what I think. What do you think?
Yeah, it's kind of the it thing among Grizzlies media, right? Amari Sankofa has talked about it. I know Chris Harrington has talked about it. You know, viewing De'Anthony Melton a backup point guard, as the Grizzlies may view him, but as that off-ball wing type who can facilitate, who can create off the dribble, but that's not his primary job or role in an offensive scheme. I subscribe to that logic too, and I do worry that they are going to try to put a square peg in a round hole with him and try to make him something he's not. Now, one of the good things is they just invested a decent amount of money in a guy who should block that from happening to an extent in Tyus Jones. I am intrigued by what those two can do together. I do think that somebody needs to shoot the ball on the perimeter with those two playing in the backcourt, so that might be an issue in that pairing. And maybe that limits them to an extent in terms of playing time together. But I like De'Anthony Melton. And to be honest with you, Grayson Allen was my disappointment earlier in the show. Why would you take minutes from De'Anthony Melton at this stage for Grayson Allen's sake? Or Marco Guterich? No disrespect to Marco. I see why they signed him. It was a worthwhile attempt, and I still think he should get opportunity down the road. But on that wing rotation, that should be the hot hand. Reward the young player who is doing what you want him to do and is contributing at a high level. You don't develop for the sake of development if that development time is not being utilized by the guy you're trying to develop. So if De'Anthony Melton is the guy who's going to come along and actually do what you want him to do and attack and be aggressive, and you already know he has a higher defensive ceiling than those two guys, why would you give time to them? Make them earn it back in practice. Or if Melton struggles, take time away from him and give those guys another shot. But it's almost like Wally Pipp, with Lou Gehrig, or in Lou Gehrig, and obviously these guys are nowhere near that level of player. But the point is, Wally Pipp was the starter for the Yankees, and then he sits out one day, and here comes Lou Gehrig, and he never gave up the spot. De'Anthony Melton comes in and is taking advantage of opportunity. Why would you take opportunity away from a young kid who's playing at a high level and in theory could be what you want him to be on that next great Grizzlies team that I keep talking about, that lens that you should be looking at this roster through? Right now, I don't see Marco or Grayson in that way, but De'Anthony Melton very much could be that guy, and I think that we need to see that through and continue to pursue that.
I love perspective. Although I like the analogy, although I don't know who the hell Lolly Pip is because I don't know anything about baseball, but I'm sure the people who know you're talking about loved it and can probably agree.
Google Lolly Pip.
It sounds great.
Google Wally Pip while listening to Britney Spears' "I'm Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman," you will get the full Joe Monix podcast experience.
It's been quite the show. If you didn't give me that title on this middle segment you just did, then who the hell is Lolly Pip? I really appreciate it, man. What can people read from you out this week?
Oh, absolutely. We're doing a lot of game coverage this week. I'm going to be doing a feature of a Christmas wish list that almost everybody will probably be doing over the next few weeks. That's one of the flaws of, you know, this not being – there's never really been a better time to be a Grizzlies fan in terms of content. You know, Sane's doing a great job with Grizzlies Maven. You have Shy and Amy that are doing great with the Memphis Flyer. You've got The Athletic, The Daily Memphian. Commercial Appeal, obviously Locked On Grizzlies here. GBB is doing well. So lots of great avenues for content. So I'm sure lots of people will do their Christmas wish list, but that'll be coming out from me this week. Lots of good game coverage. The Chicago game on Wednesday, obviously lots of different stuff coming up. So just stick with GBB. We got great stuff. Our staff does an awesome job covering the Grizzlies daily, and we appreciate everybody coming and checking us out. We got a new episode of GBB Live, our podcast, and we got a couple other podcasts on the network now. So we're growing and expanding, and all good things coming to GBB. So hopefully folks are checking us out.
Absolutely. Make sure you guys check out Joe at Joe Mullinux on Twitter. Make sure you guys check out Grizzly Bear Blue. Some great content over there. Also, make sure you go subscribe to the show every single week so you don't miss an episode. Subscribe in whatever podcast platform you use, Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple iTunes. If you're in Apple iTunes, make sure you go leave a review and rate the podcast. It really helps us in the iTunes rankings. Joe, this will be the first time I've said this all year, but let's do it again next week.
I'm looking forward to it, Mark, and I'm really excited to figure out how to work a Jessica Simpson or Christina Aguilera reference into next week's appearance.
Please do so. That'd be great.
I appreciate you, buddy. Thanks for having me on.
All right, man. Thanks.